I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
We're all about the Archers. I'm Philippa, and this is a very special day because you find me here in Birmingham. I've met somebody in the reception at the BBC, and, well, it's today we're going to be in bed with Brian. So forgive some of the fruity language, forgive some of the sound in the bedroom, but I hope you enjoy this episode. It's been a lot of fun to make. I'm Philippa from All About the Archers, and I am here with the one and only Charles Collingwood, who plays Brian Aldridge. Charles, welcome. How are you today?
I'm extremely well today. I tend to be extremely well every day. I think I'm at the age now where when I stop saying that, I may not be here. So, you know, it's a good thing for me to be extremely well.
We want you to keep being extremely well.
I want to be extremely well. Yes.
No more cat allergies, please.
I know, isn't that pathetic? Yes, so funny because it coincided with me having a really sore throat.
No.
Yes, and it was bizarre. Yes.
Was that real method acting then?
No. Just, and I did read on some website something quite rude, but it did make me laugh, that somebody had written, a listener had written, Brian has never been allergic to pussy, which I thought was quite funny.
Do you have a look at some of the...
Well, it's the only one I can get, which I try not to get, because it can be very unkind. Fortunately, it isn't about me mostly. It's a thing called Mustard Land.
Oh, yes.
They can be fairly ruthless. So Brian tends to get away with it. Oh, so they're very nice about me as a person, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, please don't retire, Charles. I know Judy has, you know.
Yeah.
So long may they think that. But yes. It's not up to me.
Well, obviously, I mean, you've been in, is it 49 years?
Yes.
I mean, there's no stopping you, but... It's amazing because there are still listeners that we have for our podcast who have only just started listening to The Archers. And I wondered, for those very new listeners, how would you summarise Brian for them?
Well, if you go back to the beginning, Brian was brought in to be with Jennifer. And to start with, he was a bit of a cardboard cutout because they just... he bought Home Farm, and in fact, I remember very early on saying to the producer, "Look, I don't know who Brian is. Who is this chap?" And so they, I had a scene with Tony. I was staying in rented accommodation in Borchester, and Tony said, "How are you, Brian?" And I said, "Fine." We were in a pub, and he said, "How come you were here?" So in the space of one speech, I said, "Well, you see, I was." In Paris, studying, and my parents were killed in a car crash. And so I had to rush home and sort everything else out and become a... And I became a farmer and bought a farm, and here I am. I bought Home Farm, and then I said, have another drink. So so that was Home Farm, really. That's it. And then for the first few years, they were hugely happy family. Brian inherited Debbie and Adam and brought them up, just as I have Judy's boys. And after about 6 or 7 years, there was quite a whisper going around that they would knock the Orridges on the head because there was no drama in them. They were too happy. They were rich, a young family. So William Smurthurst, to my eternal gratitude, turned him into a womanizer overnight and changed my life and really has. I mean, changed my career, my profile, really, by playing this bounder. I remember saying, though, to Vanessa, I don't want him to just be all bad, because very few people are, and they're probably inside if they, you know. Brian, I mean, make him have a sense of humour or make him be kind to his children or something like that. And bless her, she did. And, you know, he has been a good father. He's just had a wandering eye and up until, well, I'm not saying.
Yeah, it's not so anymore. But I remember when we last met, you were telling me that Brian wasn't the first character you...
Well, no, I played... No. Oh, no, no. In 1974, I played Dave Escott, who was a dodgy paint salesman. I now look back on it, I think it was a 6-month audition for the part of Brian, really. They were just, because much smaller cast then, much more hierarchical. And the people at the top had quite a lot to say about the youngsters coming in. I honestly think they wanted a bit of a look at me. And I played this rather smooth paint salesman, who a few weeks later, Brian sounded rather like him, but never mind. It was good. He had a slight flirtation with Peggy. And considering the actress playing Peggy is now 105, you can see how old we all are. But those were the days. I mean, the cast was only about 25 strong then. So they got me in to play Dave Escott, who was a bit smooth. He was a crook, really. And then I started playing Brian the following March.
And the rest is history.
The rest is history. I've never been certain. Of course, even now, I wonder whether, you know, they're going to write him out or kill him off or something like that. And I rather hope not now.
They better not, my goodness.
I did say to Jeremy a few months ago, there's no point killing off older characters because we will just die. You've got to be careful about doing that, because what if in real life 4 or 5 die very quickly? If you're killing off other people as well, there's a sort of plague in the village, you know.
Yes.
So I'm very proud of playing Brian. I mean, I created this character. And as I often say to young actors, well, not often, but occasionally I've said to young actors if they ask my advice, and they're joining, if you could possibly see something in the writing and the way that your character is being written that you don't think the writers have thought of, that when you do it, they go, oh, he sounds a little bit this or that. And I did consciously think I'm going to turn Brian to a bit of a Leslie Phillips, a bit of a sort of, yeah. And it worked, you know, I know it works. I mean, I do get people saying the nicest things, and it always makes me laugh that when I was at RADA, which I adored, and that was in 1963, the most criticised thing about me was my voice. I mean, that was I was jumped on time and time ago about my voice. It was too casual. And I always thought when I was at RADA, I didn't really believe that humans spoke like that. You see? So I found it very hard to go on stage saying, oh, it's chilly this morning. I mean, speaking loud, yes, but...
Yeah.
And so I was never very good at that. So it's funny, isn't it? And here I am, I've earned my living for a large part of it, through my voice in this extraordinary programme.
And do people recognise you as soon as they hear your voice, if you're out somewhere?
Yes, they do. Mm. Yes, they really, really do. And that always... I'm always quite pleased. I'm very often slightly thrown, because I'm not expecting them. I mean, when there were banks, I remember being in the bank... You know, there was a queue and I'm waiting and I'm adding up things. And then the woman in front of me said, I won't be a minute. And I said, that's very kind, I shall. And then, oh, my God, it's Brian. You need to go, what? What? Oh, I see. Hello. Yes. Yes. Well, I'm as broke as you are. Yeah, it is. And because I've done when I was famous, my famous phase, when I was on lots of... it was afterwards, This Is Your Life. When they did me on This Is Your Life, it was suddenly when the panel games, television panel games, came to me. And, you know, I did a whole succession of Weakest Links and 15 to 1s and, oh, God knows. And so I got quite a lot of recognition of what I look like. And I still get that. It's quite nice that people, although I've done a lot of drama on telly, quite nice that there's a strata of people that recognise me and know I'm Charles Collingwood. It's not an ego thing. It's just that I don't want to be Brian. I mean, the thought of being Ken Barlow or any of them in those soaps fills me with horror because you stop being an actor, you become somebody else. When I worked with Noel Edmonds, when I did Telly Addicts for 3 years for 58 shows with Noel, we used to do the Christmas show. And one year we did Corrie against EastEnders, I think. And Noel, in his usual tactful way, said to me, Charles, you introduce everybody because I haven't a clue who anybody is. And I said, of course I will. So I went in the green room and met them all before. And they all came up to a man saying, you will introduce us by our real names, won't you, to the audience? And I said, of course I will. And much as I did, the audience weren't remotely interested that their names were Charles Collingwood playing, but they only cared that they were whoever they were on the telly. I thought, my God, you really lose your own identity. Yeah. People say, you're Brian, aren't you? I let them say it, and I say, well, I'm not really. I play Brian, but I'll be like Brian for you, if you like. You
know. But if you could play any other part, I mean, particularly when they're doing the read-throughs, and if someone's not there, which character do you like to play?
Well,
you can?
The character that I did actually swap with was with Michael Cochrane, who plays Oliver Sterling. When he first joined, everybody thought he sounded just like me. And we were in the same episode once. So we swapped. Read-through's fairly intense. So we swapped parts. So he read Brian, and I read Oliver, you know, a bit more clipped than Brian. And nobody noticed. It was hilarious. Well, we did by the end. But, you know, so... But no, I wouldn't want to play Oliver Sterling because I'm playing Brian. I always used to think I'd like to play somebody like Bert Fry. Or, you know, I loved that old character. I'm sorry he's not with us anymore. Mm. And, of course, I was there with the sort of Tom Forrests of this world and Walter Gabriels, those amazing old actors they were. Tom Forrest, my dear old boy, he used to call me. Hello, my. No idea what my real name was. My dear old boy. Well, Brian, how are you this week? Because he thought he was Tom Forrest, you know. They were amazing. They're such a long time ago.
But Brian is also very good at the one-liners, the humour that comes in, increasingly so, I think. It's really very funny.
That really, really pleases me. Because as the character gets older and, of course, gets less physical and less dangerous or whatever it is, if I can continue to make the character interesting by making people laugh through the character times, I do know that was part of me saying to Vanessa, don't make him unpleasant. Nobody will ever find an unpleasant person funny. I don't find unpleasant actors who I know are unpleasant in real life. I can't find them funny when I see them trying to be funny because I know they're hateful people. No names, but there are a few, not many. And so I'm thrilled that you can find that I pick up. I do also think, again, I'm being immodest, but I do actually know the writers quite like writing sort of one-liners for Brian because they know I'll probably deliver them. I mean, you know, comedy would have been my other life if I'd not been Brian, or involved with schools and children television for so long. And on my This Is Your Life, the now Sir Richard Stilgo, and we started together in 69 when we did Beyond the Fringe together in Canterbury. And I've worked with Richard and for years with him in his comedy programmes. And he came on my This Is Your Life and said the nicest thing. He said to Michael Aspel, what people don't know, this man is one of the funniest, cleverest people delivering a line. He said, I write these comedy scripts, and he suddenly turns it into liquid gold. Well, I just thought that was No wonder he's my oldest friend. Very much so, actually, now.
But the lines, I mean, it's the stuff that could go on tea towels or mugs. But even lines that you did about the Gagriculture show and how you didn't want to go on it, and lines about Hilda, it's just...
Well, I did a very funny one today, so I hope you'll hear that.
Oh,
well, it's about Kate and Alice agreeing with Kate, and I said, look, I hope you're not going to go become all like her. And she said, no, I said, I've got one daughter, that's bad. I don't want another daughter who's all woo-woo. So that's quite... I was making Holly laugh, though. Another daughter's all woo-woo all the time. And I thought, good, well done, the writer. Woo-woo is funny. Because, you know, comedy is fascinating. So I'm glad you say that about the humour. It's made my day.
Oh, definitely. And even, I mean, we've just been talking to Jack, who plays Harry Chilcott, and there was a scene when you got to meet Harry with Kate, and Kate didn't think much of his aura. No. And it's just...
There's a good line there when she said to me, this is Harry, and I said, ah, Harry, good name. I mean, that sort of thing.
You know. And that's Brian.
Because that's Brian being a snob, really. Yes.
and nothing.
Which I don't think he is particularly. I mean, Jennifer was the snob. That was the classic thing, that Jennifer, the working class girl, daughter of the publican and the landlord, marries this wealthy, upper middle class man, Brian, who doesn't give a fig that he's living in this funny little willow cottage, or was. I mean, he did after she died. He got sorry that Jennifer didn't have Home Farm. But,
yes.
Wow, what a business that was.
Wasn't it? Yes, I still haven't forgiven Kate for sort of forcing the family home to be sold so she could keep her...
Nor have I quite. Have you interviewed Perdita Avery?
No.
I was actually talking at Woman's Hour, I was on Woman's Hour Christmas special, and there was Jenny Murray and Jane Garvey, and they were interviewing. It was a whole load of us. I had Kirsty Young next to me, and Romish Ragamuffin, he was the other side. And Jenny Murray said, you've got a newish Kate, haven't you? What's the new Kate like? And I said, well, apart from being 6 foot taller and 3 rungs posher than the one before. Absolutely wonderful. Because the original was Kelly Bright, of course.
Yes.
And Kelly still sent me a WhatsApp not long ago. You know, you're still my dad, she said. Even though I'm in EastEnders, I miss you so much. Because she did miss leaving this. Aww. She was very, very sorry she had to lose this. But I'm, you know, Perdita's wonderful.
Yes, she is. She's her character does wind us up.
She does. She's done what I think I said a few minutes ago about seeing something in the writing that was more than Kelly was giving. And so they've really gone with it. So they've turned her into an absolute monster, which Kelly wasn't. Kelly was a hippie. That was it, really. She was a bit controversial. But she's so confrontational. Perdita, the way she's made it. Great to play it. How tall are you?
Oh, not 5'8". So.
Oh, no, she's about 5'11".
Oh, God.
No, she towers over me, yes. But she's great.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Let's just talk about big scenes, because you've had big scenes, but also last week we heard the awful scene with Kenton being attacked in the car park. Mm. When those big scenes come up, even if you're not in that scene, as a cast, are you aware of the big things that are brewing, or are they as much a shock to you?
Sort of. When it's a good story, and if somebody has had a big story, so the Kenton story, I mean, He's wonderful, Richard Attlee. Plays it so well. Amazing ancestry, isn't he? And people were terribly kind and did listen over the death of Jennifer because it was very dramatic. Some of these long scenes, I think my favourite quote was Ned Sherrin when Debbie found out that Brian had been unfaithful.
Yeah.
And we had an 11-minute scene, I think, something like that.
Oh, gosh.
Which, out of 12, I mean, it was... And Ned Sherrin said, the way Charles and Tamsin played it, he said it was pure Chekhov. And I thought, I'll have that one. But again, I will say to you, these are the easiest scenes to play. The hardest scenes to play are walking across a field of unripe corn with David. No drama.
Yes.
You know, oh, this looks like another week of some. How exciting.
Yeah.
But then things surprise you. And, you know, when Brian said he was going to buy an anabolic digester, as an actor, I thought, I live in the wilds of Hampshire. Everybody was going, oh, my God, you know, they're huge, those things. What are you doing? I thought, people are interested in these funny stories and Borchester Land and all that.
And we like the drama, but we also like the sort of mundane, more seasonal events.
Good.
Because that's comforting.
Exactly as it should be. I think that's right. You can't have too much Rob Titchener.
Yes, thank goodness. Yeah.
I mean, staggeringly well played by both Louisa and Tim Watson. Staggering. Mm. Tim Watson is why he isn't one of our biggest stars. I do not know. I've seen him on stage twice. And he blows the audience away.
Really? So he's not just as
Rob. Oh no, no, he's wonderful, and such a, probably too nice. But anyway, this business is not fair. Fame is not why you become an actor. Fame is something that comes along. I have a certain fame because of the wonderful stories I've been given to speak. You know, thank you, scriptwriters. Thank you, Vanessa, who, you know, I didn't always get on with at all. Well, nobody did. Not even her, I don't think. But, you know, she said to me, we're going to give Brian another affair. Because I'd been saying to her, this was before the Siobhan story. Were you listening then?
Oh, I've been listening to it for...
Yes. Judy and I have been doing a stage show for ages, and I've been doing other things. And people were always saying, when's Brian going to have another affair? You know, it's ages. And I kept saying this to Vanessa. And then one day she rang me up and said, right, we've got one. He's going to have an affair with a doctor's wife, and they're going to have a baby. But he's not going to stop loving Jennifer. He's going to want to have his cake and eat it. And even when he's found out, he's going to want his cake and eat it. But it's going to be an affair that runs the full time because it's 9 months of the pregnancy and all that. And that was the moment that I became quite well known. That really did set it up. Rachel Johnson interviewed me. I had a very bad hip, and it was November. I had the hip done in December. She asked me to have breakfast with me. It was in the middle of the Siobhan story, but Jennifer didn't know. Brian was generally thinking, get the best of everything, you know, and it was just happening all the time. Anyway, we met for breakfast. She was interviewing me for The Spectator. She said, before we start, I've just got to tell you, I rang my mother this morning, she said, and I said, Mother, I think you ought to know I'm having breakfast with Charles Collingwood, who plays Brian Aldridge. And my mother said, oh, do be careful, darling. I was pleased about that.
Well, Quentin, who's a co-host of mine, and he is, it's fair to say, your number one fan. Brian is his absolute favourite. And even when Brian is being a little naughty, Quentin will not hear a word against Brian.
Hurrah for Quentin.
So Quentin has a question. It's a long question, so bear with me. But it ties into what you've just said. And he said, does Charles agree with me that Brian's affair with Siobhan, birth of Rory, Siobhan's death, and Rory's adoption by Jenny, and the knock-on effect on the Aldridge family was not only the greatest story for Brian, but also one of the best ever in the history of the Archers?
Well, I agree with the first bit about being wonderful for me, for Brian. Mm. But it's not up to me to decide whether it's one of the best stories ever. I mean, I'd be sort of a bit naive if I didn't think it probably was.
Yeah. And it's transcended decades as well.
Well, you see, the thing about the Archers is that why so many stories really register and people ask questions in Parliament all that, is that we do these stories at the normal pace. So the affair with Siobhan, it was about two or three years. You know, if that's on television, they meet, fall in love, and they're rowing within 3 weeks. You know, it because they've got to be moving on. Archer's reflective, endless, and life's reflective. We're always having cups of tea and talking about yesterday in real life, and so they do in the Archers. And so these stories are allowed to run the full... And that's why I think people thought it was so real, in a way. And I mean, following on from... I don't know if I told you all these stories when we met in...
Don't worry, keep... No, it's a wonderful thing.
There was a Variety Club tribute lunch to Wendy Richard, who was a massive fan, absolutely massive.
Pauline. Yes.
And they gave her a big lunch at the Savoy. Well, Judy wasn't invited. I was. I was the only one invited from the cast. And I was sitting there having my lunch. At the end of the first course, Wendy came up, this is absolutely true, and put her arms around me, whispered in my ear, "Charles, Angela Rippon and I think you're the sexiest bastard in show business." Well, excuse me. So when I left, I went home. And I used to say this in my stage show, I had embroidered it. I say I walked in the door, and there's Judy, poor darling. She hadn't even bothered to get dressed, doing the ironing in the kitchen. I said, "Put that down a minute, darling. I've just got something to tell you. I just want you to know, at the lunch, Wendy put her arms around me and said, 'Angela, I think you're the sexiest bastard in show business.'" And Judy looked at me and said, "Only in show business." Brilliant. Brilliant. That's the best line that's ever been said to me. And that's partly why we have a wonderful marriage, because we both make each other laugh. That was a surprisingly brilliant line. Absolutely brilliant.
I'm sure, I can't believe anyone doesn't know, but yes, you are married to Shula, to Judy.
Yes.
Shula.
We were married in 76.
76, my goodness.
Yeah.
And was the Archer something that you would discuss then at home, or was it strictly...
Oh, yes. I'm in the Archers because of Judy. You know, it would never have happened if I had not been with her. I just came up as her boyfriend to a party, and and I was a listener, so at least I was listening before I was with Judy. And I said that to the producer, and he said, "Well, you ought to be in it soon." And I said, "Well, thank you very much." And the next thing, I was playing Dave Escott. And then the next thing was Brian. I mean, it was as simple as that.
Well, you see, now maybe, Charles, you can help me, because obviously I'm a listener, an avid listener, and I have beseeched Jeremy to give me a part on The Archers. I said, even if it's one word. And so far he is scathing in his interest in having me on. Can you give me any tips? What should I do to get Jeremy to notice me?
Well, I'm not quite sure. I think you'll just have to wait your time.
Oh, dear. Sad times.
Maybe post-Jeremy.
Oh, dear. I just have to wait. Yes, Jeremy was not interested. Yes.
Well, I think there are probably tens of thousands of actual actors and actresses who do want to be in the Archers.
Yes.
I mean, we do have celebrities. I'll tell you what. If you suddenly became a serious interviewer nationwide doing everything, you'd be in like that, I think. Because, you know, we
are
have
you
this,
saying I'm not a serious not, interviewer, Charles?
I'm not. No, not the word serious. No, I think it's you're not a household name as an interviewer yet. That's
not yet, but you know.
That's right. Well, should you become so,
yeah, when,
I should ring Jeremy when? Again and say, "Right, Jeremy, and I want to be paid."
I'll do it for free, Jeremy.
Mind you, so
I'll
do
it for free.
Well, we do.
What do you hope for Brian in the future? No spoilers about what you might know, but have you got hopes for the character?
Hard to say. You know, we're the same age. We're both 80. We're both 81 this year. What are the hopes for life? What are the hopes when you get to our age? You know, I'm fit, as fit as I've, Brian is. I mean, I was flattered when they gave him the angina attack the summer before last. Do you remember they were doing 5 episodes a week?
Yeah.
And then they wanted to make it 6. Jeremy rang me up and said, Charles, I mean this to be flattering. So I said, OK, well. He said, well, on Thursday, something or other, in June, you are going to appear to have had a possibly fatal heart attack, because the following day will be the first day back doing 6 episodes a week.
Oh.
And I want people to turn on the Friday, having heard Brian. He said, but I must tell you, it's not a heart attack, it's an angina attack, medically controlled, you know, let's... well, until the cat story, yes. Angie, I hadn't even mentioned. So I said, fair enough. I don't know if you know, but I'm mad on cricket and I'm a member of the MCC and everything. Well, the Thursday night potential heart attack coincided with the test match at Lord's where I was. Well, on the Friday, when it had gone out in the sand, I'm sitting having a coffee in the, with, you know, 35,000 people there, with a stream of people coming up saying, you all right? What's happening? Should you be here? So I think it worked.
I think when we last met, you had your cricket tie on as well. I seem to remember at the Hay Festival.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh.
Because you were about to do the performance of the episode, which I loved.
It was nice, wasn't it?
To see the
it was lovely, yes.
Physical side of things.
Yes,
I wish
it's lovely.
There was more
so
of
do
that.
I. Yeah, I do. I do quite. That's why I say we don't do. We used to take the Archers on the road a lot more and go to all the agricultural shows and do personal appearances and do false scenes, specially written for the, and get people up from the audience. And I liked it when the BBC were more inclusive. But that's the way it is. I think they'd probably say money, dear.
Well, we're hoping you go back to the Hay Festival this year. We'll have to see.
Well, it was jolly nice. We didn't have half the weather we had last year.
Oh, it was glorious, wasn't it? Absolutely glorious.
I'll have a new knee then. I'll be able to walk better.
Now, this is a slightly odd question.
Go on.
But it's one where... This is for Brian, not yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a bit of a game. And I'm going to give you 3 names. The names are Jolene, Pat and Joy. And you have to, it's snog, marry, avoid. So you have to choose one that Brian might snog, one that Brian might marry and one that he would avoid. So we've got Pat, Jolene and Joy. Which one out of those would you kiss, first of all? Who would the... if you could choose, no spoilers, we're just...
Jolene, probably.
Oh, lovely. And who would you marry?
Pat, probably.
So you'd be avoiding
Although,
Joy.
I wouldn't marry Joy. Joy's not his sort of class. He's not his sort of man.
But she's good with the cats. With
oh, yeah, yeah. She's fine, but she's not Brian's type. I mean, Debbie thought they were having a little fling, you know, and yes. Brian went mad. I think Brian likes Joy, but I think... He doesn't see what he'd have in common with Joy. I mean, he doesn't have much in common with Pat. tough group there. I mean, I might say nothing to none, all of them.
Yes.
But
it's just a bit fun.
But I'm trying to be Brian over. Yeah.
The other question we ask most people is about biscuits. Now, if Brian had a favourite biscuit, because biscuits are important to us on the podcast... What would Brian's biscuit of choice be, do you think?
Well, if you think of Brian's behaviour over the years, it must be a hobnob.
A chocolate hobnob or a plain hobnob?
No, I don't think you'd care. Just the word knob, I think, would make his eyes water.
If you, Charles, had half an hour in Ambridge, because obviously Ambridge is real, it exists for us all. If you had half an hour in Ambridge, whose door would you knock on to talk to? Where would you go to spend half an hour?
Yeah, well, the scriptwriters always make him go and talk to David.
Yeah.
I'd like to think it ought to be Justin. Mm. It might be Oliver. Although we don't get many scenes together, we do pigeonhole ourselves in society. We do tend to become friends with people we feel comfortable with. And mm-hmm. I mean, we sometimes go out of the box. That's why those questions about Brian kissing and marrying. And I think it would be somebody like Oliver. I've always found it, because it's the Archers, and I've always found it extraordinary that Alistair's father, the prof, should be so friendly with Jazza. Mm. What the hell have they got in? But, you know, that's the Archers, isn't
yes,
it? Yes. Perhaps I'm trying to be.
I mean, do you want a Jazza of your own then, Charles? Would you like her? Well, you've got Kate. I mean, that's enough of a character in your house.
Who would Brian go and talk to? I don't know. Wouldn't be one of the Grundy.
And he's quite fed up with Justin because Justin came to live with him over Christmas.
No, absolutely, yes. And he said, I ain't going to be any longer in the bathroom.
Yes. And forcing him on the golf course.
It was such fun, yes. I think we're playing golf again soon. I hope I win next time.
I'd quite like you to go and have another chat with Stella because I think there's, you know...
Stella, yes.
Still more to be heard.
Oh, yes, I agree, yeah. No, she's jolly good, Lucy Speed. I like her. I like them all, mostly. Yeah. It's a unique programme, one that I'm immensely proud. And, you know, if it's the last thing I do, which it probably will because I turn everything else down, I hope we'll be having a similar conversation in 10 years' time. Why the hell not? You know, I've just had fish for lunch. It must be good. I'm not drinking today. Good heavens. But no, I'm very, very proud to be part of the programme and proud to have created and made, I hope, for the listener, Brian, a character that they look forward to hearing. And with your kind remarks, may I continue to amuse them when the time allows, when the writers write it like that, because it's wonderful. And
well, we absolutely look forward to every year ahead. And I look forward to sitting here in 10 years, in 20 years'
yes.
time.
But I'm very happy to sit here in 6 months if you want to talk to me again. You know.
But Charles, no, honestly, it's just been such a
lovely
privilege to talk to
you. I don't know whether I've told you what you want to hear or there's
absolutely
anything there.
Have.
I hope the scissors won't have to go into
Thank you.
Not a bit.
And I'll be back with the usual episode on Tuesday with Quentin. Until then, it's a goodbye from me. Bye-bye, everyone.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.